standing in the providence of God. Any retreat following the spirituality of St. Ignatius always includes a meditation on sin. We'll ask ourselves a series of questions and briefly answer them as we go along. What is the meaning of sin? Sin is part of God's providence, part of His permissive providence, and therefore has a mysterious purpose in sanctifying and indeed saving the human race. We are dealing with a profound mystery. Why there is sin? But we dare not question that God has a mysterious, infinitely wise reason for allowing sin. Angelic sin even before the dawn of the human race. Hell came into existence the moment the angels refused to obey God. Hell is the consequence of the created will refusing to obey the divine will. At the dawn of mankind, there was original sin, and ever since, there has been personal sin. I think I can safely say that not long after we reached the age of discretion, we began to sin. But not only we, but society has now accumulatively been sinning over the centuries. We therefore theologically distinguish among original, personal, and social sin. And whatever else we say about our country, let's make sure we know that America is a sinful nation. We further know these are preliminaries to the main focus of this meditation. We further know that there are mortal and venial sins. And in the language of the focus of this retreat, mortal sin means exactly what it says. It is fatal sin. It is deadly sin. Mortal sin is death to the supernatural life in our souls. Venial sin every other offense against God. But know the difference. Every sin, just because it is sin, always has two consequences. Every sin always deprives the sinner of God's grace. And every sin always incurs the debt of suffering. In mortal sin, the grace lost, we believe, is sanctifying grace, the life of God, which entitles us to the possession of heaven. In venial sin, there is also the loss of grace. And the degree of the loss of grace is determined by the gravity of the sin. Every sin always deprives the sinner of God's grace. And every sin incurs, if I use the word, incurs penalty before God. Penalty is an abstraction. Better, every sin incurs a debt of pain. Had there been no sin, there would be no pain. That is an article of faith. Every time we sin, therefore, we incur a debt of suffering. And so far from complaining about the pain in our lives, let's be intelligent. All we're doing is paying off our debt. But I don't like it. Sorry, my friend. That's the way it is. You're in debt. I'm what? You're in debt. What do you mean? You've got a debt of suffering. And the only option, as St. Augustine tells us, is either to pay off that debt here or pay it off hereafter. Just to say this, without going into the theological ramifications, there are three major errors, about sin in the modern world, and they are shaking the church in supposedly advanced countries like ours to its foundation. There is situation ethics. It all depends on the situation in which you are. There are some situations in which, in spite of the now 2,000 years of the church's teaching, there are some situations in which it is not a sin. Half says the patriarch of situation ethics, Joseph Fletcher. Adultery, fornication, masturbation, homosexuality used to be considered sins. Well, there are situations where you may enjoy the sexual pleasure and it's in print, and you don't sin. That was Charles Kern's only problem. And it took 18 years for Charles Kern to be finally silenced. And guess who it took? It took the Pope in Rome. after silence, Charlie Curran. For 18 years, the bishops allowed, such practices as faith tells us are contrary to the law of God. Again, a contemporary error called proportionalism. As long as there is a proportionate reason for doing something, you may do it. For example, now we have the idea that if a person finds it difficult to do God's will, say, in the matter of not yielding to pleasures of the flesh, can there be proportional reasons? Enjoying sexual pleasure and not commit a sin. Well, proportionalism says yes. The key to morality, so say the proportionalists, is not what a person does, but whether he has adequate reason for doing it. Again, the fundamental option. In one book after another, we now read that each one of us, sometime during life, makes a fundamental option to either accept God or reject Him. Mortal sin has been redefined in one book after another. And I wish I could say those writings have no imprimatur. No wonder we have so many empty confessionals. Won't you buy the theory of the fundamental option? Now, the only kind of sin that estranges a person from God is where the individual totally and completely rejects the will of God. Short of that, it is not a mortal sin. We go on. Whatever else the commission of sin is, it is a profound mystery of our faith. What is the mystery? The mystery is the mystery of human freedom. In other words, we do not comprehend why God decided to make human beings with a free will with which they could either serve God or resist the will of God. But let's make sure that even though we do not comprehend why God allows sin, it is not for a moment question that God allows sin for reasons best known to Himself. In other words, part of the mystery of sin is the mystery of human liberty. And whatever else else we know as we reflect on the fact of sin. We must believe that God allowed sin, or at least one profoundly divine reason. It was because sin entered the world that God became man. We're going to talk about the incarnation and the meaning of the coming of the Son of God. But whatever else we know about sin, let's make sure we know this. God became man because man had sinned. And all that we believe, and that we would reflect on during this retreat about the incarnation, about the mysteries of our faith as found in the Gospels. At root, we believe that God became man in order that by his incarnation, sin might be redeemed. We go on. The mystery of sin is comparable to the mystery of God's love. Man sinned. Why did God allow man to sin? I repeat, I do not comprehend this any more than you do. But memorize this. God allowed man to sin in order that by man's sinfulness, God might show his greater love for man because man had sinned. What are we saying? God allowed sin to enter the world so he, God, might love man more. It's our faith. I do not comprehend any more, I repeat, than you do. God wanted to show, in a way, dare I say it, that he would not have been able to show his unspeakable, ineffable, incomprehensible love for man in a way that he did, and in a way that he does. Because we have sinned. We are asking ourselves, what do we mean by what we call the mystery of sin? By the mystery of sin, we mean that God allowed sin, in order that it might reveal in a way that, as far as our mind can say it, he would not have been able to do so because God wanted to show his mercy. And the essence of mercy is of love shown to those who don't love you. Why then has God allowed sin to enter the world? God allowed sin to enter the world so that he might love his creatures more than he would have loved them had they not sinned. I have to keep reminding myself this is not a theological lecture. And the difference between a lecture and a meditation is that in a meditation, or you give the people some truths of the faith and you explain them. That's theology. But yet you tell them how they are to put their faith into practice. I sure hope I'll be clear. God has allowed us to sin, hear it, that we might love Him more than we would have had we not sinned. Shall we then say that sin is part of the providence of God? Emphatically. In other words, whatever else St. Ignatius had in mind when he wrote the spiritual exercises, they were written already substantially during the 10 months of his conversion in the cave of Manresa in Spain. Ignatius was a very reserved man. His confreres managed to get about 100-page autobiography, which they had to pull out. But whatever comes out from the autobiography of Ignatius is that he was a sinner, steeped in sin. He was converted, and his 10 months of conversion produced the spiritual exercises. If you don't know this about the spiritual exercises, you don't know, well, the spiritual exercises. They were composed by a sinner during his process of conversion. To other sinners. That's us. Bad grammar, but perfect theology. That's us. And what he found out after making his 10-month spiritual exercises, he found out that God, having allowed him to sin so often and so deeply, he then was to love God more than he would ever. And we may say it, have had to love God had he not sinned. We've sinned much, so we are to love much. And this is the retreat. If by Sunday, when we finish these exercises, I have not convinced you that you are to do more for God than you've ever done before, love Him dearly. Serve Him faithfully. And give yourself to those whom God puts into your life out of love for God with a selflessness and a self-sacrifice that you've never practiced before, and I've wasted your time and you are wasting mine. Before we close this on the mystery of sin, God allows sin in order that greater good might be. result that would have been commonly speaking even possible. Have there been no sin? We're scratching on Grammy because I keep repeating we're climbing the Himalayas. We do not fully understand the meaning of sin, but it has a meaning. What's one profound meaning? That greater good might come because of the sin in our lives. In our final reflection, the providence of God in our, and I should repeat, our first person plural, sinful lives. First, our own sinfulness. I could identify 40. I will limit myself to 4. 4 blessings that God wants us to come out of our own past sinful lives. First, expiation. He's got a lot to expiate. He's got a lot of reparation to make. He's got a lot to make up for. And always keep in mind, as I kept telling my students, keep always in mind, every sin has 2 effects built in. Every sin is a failure in loving God. So on that level, how do we expiate having failed in loving God less by loving ourselves more? That's sin. We are to expiate. Expiation number 1. We are to expiate by loving God more than ourselves for the rest of our lives. Find out during the retreat, what are the manifestations of self-love in your life? And with the help of God, first find them, then root them out, pull them out. Expiation means also making up for the second effect of sin. Remember? The death of suffering or pain. It will have a debt coming. And let's be clear, it's not just for our own sin, but the sins of others. That's why there's pain in the world. Period. There is pain in the world, so we might expiate the debt of suffering that we owe for having sinned. So what's new? The only thing that is new is we don't like it. Pardon me. That's the definition of pain. What's the definition of pain? Pain is whatever I don't like. Say that again. Pain is whatever I don't like. Pain is what I do not like. All monosyllables, to keep it simple. God is, the second brilliant effect of all sin, and I've incurred a debt of pain. Look, as I've said before, let's be smart. Either we patiently endure the pain that we experience in this life, or we'll have to pay it off in the life to come. And one reason that God provides us, that's the verb, by the way, that goes with the noun, providence. God provides us with pain as a foretaste of what's even more coming to us if we don't patiently endure the pain here. Gee, I never thought of that. Second, providential purpose of pain, pardon me, providential purpose of sin, to love God more and to patiently endure pain. Secondly, watchfulness. You've got to be constantly on our guard. You must always watch out. And let's be honest, the one person we've got to constantly watch out for, our greatest enemy, honest, has our name. And by now you think we know what a threat we are to our own spiritual well-being. That's what a retreat is all about. Find out what train of thought, what desires, what way of acting, what tendencies, what fears in your life are a danger to you. Say that again. You mean that there are fears that are a danger to my spiritual life? I don't get it. There are things we should not fear. Well, I'm scared. My friend, there are a lot of things that we should legitimately fear, but not run away from. Watchfulness, be on constant guard against the threat to your own spiritual well-being from you, personal, individual, fallen human nature. Third, providential purpose of sin in the world, reliance on God. If there is one person that by now we should know we cannot trust, it's ourselves. So what does God want to teach us? We've got enough experience with our weakness and inability to cope with our own sinful tendencies. So, we rely on God. And we keep telling him, Lord, I know I cannot make it. My past experience tells me I'm helpless. I'm hopeless. Reliance on God. But I'm going to rely much more than I love myself. That's quite a statement. And of course, we read the gospel, we reread them, we memorize parts of them. Ask, he tells us, and you will receive. Knock, and it will be opened. That's why, if we're going to remain in God's grace and grow in the spiritual life to which we are destined, we must constantly ask God to help us. But here it is. Do you know why God sends us temptations? To make us more holy. Say that again. God sends us temptations to make us more holy. Realizing our own ineptitude and helplessness, we call on God and in the depth of our hearts we shout, help me. How many times over the years I was alone in chapel and I make sure that I don't use my mouth, but my heart crying out, Lord, help me. You don't keep the faith as a priest in today's world without oceans of grace. And the worst enemies of a priest that wants to remain faithful to Jesus Christ who ordained him are his fellow priests. You know, you're not mine, and I sure know mine. Reliance on God. Still on the level of God's providence in allowing us to sin. Self-distrust. There's only one bedrock problem that we have in life, and that is our incredible pride. God has allowed us to sin, to make us, in spite of ourselves, more humble. Whatever else sin should do in our lives, it ought to humiliate us, make us realize, no matter what the world around us may think, we know better. We are helpless. Helpless. Human beings in the face of temptation. But one warning, as we close our reflection on sin, and as we realize that God has a purpose in allowing us to sin, and one of the most fundamental reasons that God had in allowing us to sin was to engender distrust of self. Keep us humble. But watch it. I've dealt with too many chosen souls in my 43 years in the priesthood. The great danger for those who want to serve God with their whole heart, conscious as they are of their own sinful past, the great danger is they'll become discouraged, despondent, and even be tempted to despair. As I spoke to a girl not 6 weeks ago, slashed her wrist, slashed her neck, within minutes of death, she managed to survive. And the more generous we want to be with God, once it dawns on us, there's only one purpose in life, only one, to love God here on earth and to enjoy His company of the Trinity for all eternity. Once that becomes clear, and you realize how much you've sinned, and I mean it, there's a great danger of becoming anxious, worried, and I repeat, discouraged, despondent, distraught, and finally tempted to despair. Fight discouragement like the plague. It is the favorite temptation of the evil spirit against those who are trying to, having sinned in the past, sincerely trying to serve God faithfully in the future. Never for a moment allow a single thought of discouragement to dwell on your mind. God allows us to be tried. He never wants us to be discouraged, never worried, never be anxious. Sin has a noble purpose in God's providence. Either that we might do greater good, but we've got to be courageous in facing ourselves, the world and the devil, in spite of our past sinful experience. Trust God, He will provide. That's what providence is all about. God provides. Lord Jesus, we have all sinned. We've offended Your divine majesty by letting ourselves more than You. But we believe that You allowed us to sin in order that we might love You more than we would ever have loved You had we not sinned. Give me the light, dear Jesus, to see myself as I really am in Your eyes. But protect me, dear Savior, from staring at myself and becoming discouraged. Keep my eyes on You, dear Jesus, walking hand in hand with You through the dark night of this life until